Hi, Brittany.
Hi, Danielle.
I'm so excited today to talk with you because this is a topic that both of us really like to talk about and really think is important. And also, I'm most excited because you and I have decided to do a workshop about this, right?
Yeah, it's like our
Love.
combined passion project that we've been loving spending time talking about, and it's been so fun and so enlightening. And I think we're also both getting our own personal growth out of it as well, which is always
Oh,
fantastic.
absolutely. So what we're talking about today is RSD or rejection sensitivity disorder or dysphoria,
Yeah.
actually, right? Dysphoria, I
Yeah.
always do that. So yeah, rejection sensitivity dysphoria. And I have loved working with you on this and seeing you come alive about this project. And so I wanted to talk a little bit with you today about the workshop, why RSD is so important to both of us, and just get a sense of what we'll cover in the workshop, but more importantly, why this style of workshop that we're offering is we think is going to really, help us help our people in our community. That's what I wanted to do with you today.
Yeah, absolutely. RSD is definitely a topic that is really, really close to my heart. I know that my personal journey with it and learning about it has been quite life altering, and it's mainly popularized and talked about within the context of ADHD. However, that doesn't mean that it exists exclusively within that context. It's just most commonly seen and discussed as a phenomenon within the ADHD community.
Yeah.
But basically, maybe we'll just start a little bit. I'll just explain a little bit for our listeners as to like what it is and.
Yes, and I'm going to add a few things from what I've seen in the adoption community and why it's important. So yeah, get us started. Like, what exactly is it?
Yeah, so RSD or rejection sensitive dysphoria, it has been mainly popularized and coined and discussed by Dr. William Dodson, who is a
Okay.
certified psychiatrist who specializes in ADHD. And he has done, a lot of work and a lot of research and does a lot of great advocacy work on this topic to because he noticed that a lot, anecdotally with his clients, and also I know when we talk about it, when me as an ADHDer and going and meeting with professional peers and also ADHD in my friends in my personal life, there's sort of this shared experience that is indescribable but
Yes.
commonly shared but not effectively reflected currently in the DSM, which is unfortunate. But we know sometimes the DSM is not does not always, encompass or describe mental health or
I
mental
agree.
specific disorders as holistically or generalized as it should. So
I
hopefully
agree.
we can have some process in that. But basically, RSD is a really strong emotional response or reaction to rejection
Yes.
or a perceived rejection. So that can be like a real rejection, like I didn't get invited to this party, or it can be a perceived rejection, something like misinterpreting a tone or
Right.
not texting you back on time. And basically, what happens is that there is a really internalized, self-turned-in response where you just start to feel this immense pain. It's again, it's a very hard emotional experience to describe.
Right.
If you haven't had it, you will not know what it feels like.
Right.
And that is kind of the tricky part of it, is it is an indescribable feeling, but it is a type of just emotional pain and physical pain that is off, that is typically distorted or not, a rational response to the actual event. And so, but that does not make it any less valid or any less painful.
Yes.
And this is where, you know, when we get into the states, so sometimes individuals with ADHD are called so sensitive, or they're told they overreact, which will only make somebody having an RSD response so much worse. And we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
But basically it is, you know, just a feeling of feeling rejected. And some typical responses to that are, you know, inward negative self-talk, shutting
right.
down, or it can also kind of manifest in a really aggressive response and self-defending in a situation that you really don't need to defend yourself in, as well as potentially leading to some problematic people-pleasing behaviors.
Right.
So that's just, you know, the general gist of it. You know, we'll get more into it as we go. But
okay. But oh yeah, thank you for describing it so well. I've seen, unfortunately, many people show some of those symptoms that you are talking about. When I think about the people that I work with in the adoption community and their reactions to their set of, you know, thing challenges, I often see the RSD come out in a different way. So it's not the ADHD community that I get to work with, unfortunately. I get to work with the adoption community, and I see adoptees have these exact same symptoms, because as we know in the adoption community world, there's seven core issues, and the main issue at the center of it is loss. But then the next set around loss, one of the number one is rejection and how to deal with rejection, because adoptees have this feeling and have the experience of being the ultimate rejection. So this is why I love when you talk to me about this phenomenon and how you describe the fact that there's so much people pleasing that happens. It's a reaction that's actually a physical pain and an emotional pain. Like, you make it real, Brittany, when you talk about it, because I see it being manifested in so many people that I get to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's, you know, it's important to understand a little bit of how RSD comes to be. And again, there's not one clear exact answer to it, but that it is this general sort of understanding that a lot of it has to do with like a self-protection mechanism.
Exactly. Right. So
think about when we've experienced a really big rejection in the past, it's natural for us to not want to feel that pain and not want to feel that emotional. It's almost like we're hypervigilant now to it happening again, which is why, you know, oh, I don't want to say the wrong thing in the wrong moment because that's painful, or I don't want to put myself out there because then you're going to tell me you don't like it and that hurts. And, you know, when it comes to, I know you're talking about what happens within the adoption community and that ultimate rejection. One of the reasons that it's, you know, assumed that it's so common in ADHD is, and again, this is Dr. William Dotson who you know, states this, that children with ADHD experience, I think it's like 20,000 more corrections.
Yes.
A non-ADHD peer. I think it's by the time they're age 12. You know, the numbers change. But basically, you know, being told to sit down and be quiet once.
Right.
Whatever. But 20,000 more times of you're too loud, you're too this, you're too that. Oh, you're messy.
Right.
All of that kind of adds up, and it's almost like the death by a thousand, by a million paper cuts, where all of a sudden really big wound. And, you know, when we experience corrections, you know, from our loved ones, from our parents, it's just a natural part of them, you know, parenting us, you know, that it's it's not an intentional thing. It's just that cumulative process of, oh, at what point is it because there's something wrong with me?
And exactly.
By the time that, you know, kids start to get to that point where they notice this, they start noticing these things way earlier than we give them credit for. I think that, you know, it's important for adults to realize that kids are way more self-aware and aware of their surroundings, and they're little sponges. They're viewing everything And it won't take them very long to realize, like, I was told 30 times today that I was too loud, but my best friend was not.
Right?
And
Yes.
then that's that kind of slower, that development and that
Oh.
protection. And then adding in the, you know, the emotional dysregulation piece as well of ADHD, that's, and challenges with social skills, which makes it more likely to receive
Right.
to be rejected. That's a whole snowball effect of, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You're highlighting something that that we talk a lot about in the adoption world, and that is the negative self-talk or the negative internal working model that we build up over time, getting all of this negative feedback all the time. On the adoption side, it isn't so much that they're getting corrected, but they're told that they're not quite enough, or they're other because they don't quite fit in with the family, don't look like the family, don't have the same culture, and it's not so much the family themselves that is telling them that, but everybody around society who knows that they're adopted is saying, And over time, that same kind of self-talk that you're talking about there, Brittany, over time, you know, just sort of wears them down, opens that same wound over and over and over again, brings them back to the trauma of the major loss they have had over and over and over. Maybe not just loss of their birth parents, but then loss of their foster parents, loss of maybe siblings, and just loss of everything.
Yeah.
They have that reaction. They end up with feeling that neural pathway is already set, and they're feeling it. And so they do go into what you were talking about, which is that protection mode, and you know, feeling that sense of, oh, I don't know if I'm gonna run, or if I'm gonna try to hide, or if I'm going to just freeze. All those things that we do with our regular protection of self, it all comes out in the same way. See, these are the similarities. Every time you talk about this, Brittany, these are the things I'm like, oh yes, she knows what work I'm doing. She knows this, you know.
It's also interesting, and I know we've talked about this a little bit, and this will be maybe, you know, beneficial for us to explore in future podcasts and in future
Yes.
collaborations. There is also a lot of overlap of ADHD within the adoption community as well, just
Right.
because, you know, certain predictors and certain situations that might lead to, you know, a child being adopted and all those associations that it is also. So there is also, of course, that whole piece. And then I think definitely one of the really challenging things when we talk about RSD is that you never actually really know what the you can develop some self-awareness around what might trigger it or what types of situations you know you're going to be more vulnerable in, but sometimes it's the most random thing in the whole world that will just spike it up, like, oh, you worded that weirdly and I now am up at 3 a.m. thinking about the weird thing that I said yesterday.
Wow. So
Yeah.
unpredictable.
Yeah. And I think that that's a way that I forget who it was that rephrased this for me. It was
Yeah.
So I'll have to think about it. If it comes up, I'll
Okay.
In. But it was basically the idea of that, you know, in many ways, RSD is like your brain is technically doing what it's supposed to do in the sense of it's trying to protect you. And so it's not viewing the RSD necessarily like as the enemy or as a bad thing or as something to be angry or ashamed about, which, you know, we're told, oh, you just need to have thicker skin. Oh, it sticks in stones. Oh, you know, you're just so sensitive. You're going to have to work through that. You know, you got to build resilience. You have to, all of these things. Yeah, those are skills that you have to build, but your brain is technically doing what it's supposed to do, and it's protecting you because our brain's number one job is to help us survive.
Right.
And so the development of this is it's a coping strategy. It's not a very beneficial coping strategy in many situations, but it exists for a reason. Your brain is not broken because you have RSD. Your brain is doing what it's supposed to. It's just not, it's protecting you. It's doing its job. It's just, there are, how do we move on from that? And how do we work through that? That's the piece.
Oh yeah. Well said, because it really is a good coping and protection mechanism. It has served all of us well to have it, because it has protected us. However, and this is why I'm excited to do the workshop, it does become problematic, because we realize that the reactions that we might be having in a certain situation may not quite match what actually needs to happen. And so this is why building this workshop with you and delivering it is going to be so amazing, because we're going to look at ways to at least increase our awareness about RSD and its effects. And for me, I'm most excited about helping parents to recognize the signs and symptoms of RSD, so that we can somehow maybe get in front of it, or at least recognize what's happening in the moment, so that, and then the third thing is at least see patterns over time, so that we can then over time develop ways to think ahead of time, strategies ahead of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I definitely think that when it comes to RSD, you know, having my own experiences with it, you know, I am very aware of what RSD is, and I have it, you know, I've done a lot of work and I have strategies when it happens, but I have zero expectation that I will just one day never have another RSD response. I know that is not an option.
Yeah.
But knowing about it, because I actually learned about it, you know, I knew about my ADHD diagnosis. I had been doing a lot of work on my executive functions, a lot of learning.
Okay.
And the RSD piece was like a kind of a later tidbit where all of these childhood experiences sort of went, that's what that was.
Okay. It fell into place.
Not everybody feels that way all the time. I wasn't just experiencing a normal reaction. And that in itself was so validating, because for the first time, instead of being sensitive and just not, because if you don't know what RSD is in your brain, everybody else experiences it, they just figure it out. But knowing that, no, this is a thing.
Yeah.
Not everybody has it.
Right.
A lot of people do, but like we see
not
it.
Not everybody. Yeah.
But not everybody. Yeah. But this is a thing that is real. These emotions, even though I know are not a reasonable reaction to this situation, they exist because of a valid reason, because of a process. And that is such a validating experience, because now we've named it, right? Name it to tame it. And now we can kind of work with that and know this is what it is.
So, Brittany, may I ask, like, do you remember how long it was between knowing you had ADHD and then learning that you also experienced the symptoms of RSD? Do you remember? Like, what's the time gap in there?
So I definitely don't know for sure.
Right.
But I would say at least a couple years.
At least a couple years.
And I was actually first introduced to it by Jessica McCabe's How to ADHD. There was a video on it. And I was
wow.
So I've never heard anybody else say this before in exactly these words. And this is the thing.
Right?
So it was almost just finding out about RSD and learning about RSD was almost just as beneficial and life-changing as my actual original ADHD diagnosis.
Wow.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And see, so like if that could happen to you and with your resilience and your energy and your intellect, imagine that how many people out there are struggling, have no idea about RSD, and just think it's them, they're wrong, right?
I always am very surprised when I work with parents and kids and these parents. A lot of times ADHD does run in families, not always, but a lot of times, a child gets an ADHD diagnosis and their parent might already have a diagnosis or not be diagnosed. And then, or they're just a mom or a dad who just wants everything for their child, they go into this aggressive research mode and they show up and they're like, I know this and I know this and I know this. And then I talk about RSD. No, I've never heard of that before. And then they go and they do their research and they're just shocked or they're just so like, wow, that's. I actually have had a couple parents who pursue their ADHD diagnosis after that moment where they're like, I didn't even connect with all these other things, but that one I did.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, like the power of the importance and power of getting the information out there and is so important, which is why we're doing this workshop. Yeah, so I was wondering, Brittany, we're doing this workshop, and I wondered if you could describe the workshop and the amazing creative element that we want to bring to it. Can you do that? Yeah.
Definitely. So I know that, our main goal for this is to discuss how RSD, well, build awareness, personal awareness, as well as ability to recognize it in others between, parents and their children and children and their parents. Because RSD, parents experience RSD just as much as kids experience RSD. So it's not just the parents' job to recognize their child's RSD. It's the child's, the goal is the child is able to recognize RSD in themselves, but it's also that the parents can recognize RSD in themselves. And by opening the floodgates of communication, again, it's not always predictable, but there are some things that we can put in place and some language that we can put in place and some, emotional literacy skills that can be developed to, when we're having an RSD response, make it a little smoother, not make it, not keep doubling down and continuing to reject each other more because we feel rejected, which is so easy to do, right?
Oh
It's
my goodness.
easy to do.
Yes.
And
I'm
so,
really happy about that's what you want to do. Yeah.
yeah. And so, when you talk about the creative component, because the experience of RSD is, like we've said, nobody can really describe it. We know if you know what it feels like, you know what it feels like, but you cannot put it into words what it feels like. So I really, really, really love any type of creative modality. So one of the things that is going to be included in our workshop is a creative representation of your experience of RSD. And
Right.
I think that that's, sometimes we can show better than we can say, and sometimes by showing than we can say. And I think that, it's an easier way for, kids and parents to sum it all up in a way that makes sense to them and in a way that is very creative and visual. And it is, I feel that it will be a fun way to talk about a really complex, at times, a challenging topic.
I love it, and it is music to my ears to hear you thinking about it in this light with the creative spirit going through this. One of the things I know that we're both planning for this workshop is for everyone to be able to have a chance to work within compassion and work and using our curiosity rather than our judgment. And actually using our creativity to to describe and express what RSD means. I think it's great because parents and children often are always struggling for the right words, especially when we're talking about emotions. Nobody likes to use the emotional words or talk about emotions, but you can actually feel the emotions a lot easier in your body and use art or the expression or using your hands to express how you feel much easier than you can with the words. So this is why I think this workshop is going to be so awesome. And the other thing that's really nice is the workshop, the way that you and I have sort of designed it, it's a workshop that has a parent with their child or parents with their child working together to understand what RSD means to them. So it's not like separate, focused only on the kids or focused only on parents. It's trying to find a way for them to find a language and a way to communicate what RSD means to them together, which totally makes me happy as a family therapist. So when you said that this is how you wanted to run this workshop, I was really excited. Plus, I'm an artsy-fartsy kind of person too, and the fact that we don't have to rely on just words to express ourselves. I was just like, I'm all in, Brittany. I'm all in.
And for anybody who doesn't already know, Danielle is a very talented artist.
Oh gosh. Okay.
Very talented.
Well, I just like it. I just love it.
And you're
So
good
thank
at
you. Thank you. And I think other people can be good at it as well. And it is art for me is a bit of a love language. So I just want other people to have a chance to do that. So yeah.
Absolutely. I also think that, beyond just the creative component, the other activities and the other, discussions that we're going to have throughout the workshop, they're just going to be a really powerful way for, it's going to help build that connection and build that basis of trust and safety and that feeling of, just being able to acknowledge, I'm feeling rejected right now
Yes.
and I need to, it doesn't matter what you did or what I did, let's go to our toolbox.
Yeah. Yeah.
And having that toolbox is really, a game changer. So sometimes it's as simple as, knowing that certain words or certain phrasings can kind of leave you there. So for example, in my relationship, I really struggle with why, like, why is this out? Why is this here? Even though it might be really playful, it's like, well, obviously it's because I left it there. What are you trying to say? Right?
Right.
What he's just asking a question, but to me it's like, oh my gosh. So
Right.
this is a really, simple kind of a really simple language switch of, hey, I noticed this is on here.
Yeah.
What were you, like what was happening? Like just a shift in language, or even just like a, I know we don't like why questions. I'm just wondering why this is actually here. This is a strange place for it to be. Just
Yeah.
different kind of softening of, it's not the question. It's not the actual, it's how you phrase it, or it's
It's
how.
how you phrase it. Yeah. And this is where I totally get what you're saying. And I phrase things wrong all the time with my kids and with other people. But I think I hope to do in the workshop with the parents is to just sort of give them some examples of, how this kind of language could be perceived as negative, and maybe consider this kind of phrasing, and using even just using our powers of curiosity versus our parental voices of, oh, it's not done. Why did you leave your lunchbox on the, what? We need to think, oh, how would I, if somebody said that to me, how would I receive that? Maybe I would receive better, something better, like, oh my goodness, looks like you had a really busy day. And you look like you're exhausted. Do you think that after you catch your breath, you could pick up your lunchbox? Very difficult,
Absolutely.
right?
And I think that what you demonstrated there is that, it's not the boundary or the communication of needs or the communication of expectation that is the problem. As parents need to communicate expectations for their kids, like it's your job to keep them safe and help them learn and guide them. If their lunchbox is all over the place and they're leaving their shoes all over, it's your house. It makes them sick. You need to teach them how to put them away. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
A lot of times, validation
Yeah.
and acknowledgement is that missing piece where it's that olive branch that de-escalates. So when I work with clients, sometimes the biggest challenge is, I know I messed up. Like, I know I was wrong.
Yeah.
Just wanted them to let me say my whole piece first.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
Yeah.
I just wanted to finish my thought. I wasn't trying to explain why I wasn't wrong. I know I was wrong. And then it's interesting. Sometimes, I'll hear them, these like 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Sometimes they're so wise. Well, they are all wise. I love them. I love
Yeah,
them.
yeah.
We'll just be talking about how, I knew that I was wrong and I was going to take accountability for it. And then they yelled at me and I doubled down.
Right.
I protected myself because they were trying to protect themselves. And so it's that piece of, especially when we do talk about a lot of corrections, often kids with ADHD are made to feel like they are a problem or they are,
Yeah.
not intentionally, but they're more likely to get in trouble at school.
Right.
Or have more detentions or be called out more, have less friends, be that odd man out. And if they're already feeling like they're, I'm gonna put it in air quotes, like a bad kid,
Right.
they're gonna be more sensitive to anything in that situation of like, oh my goodness, I left my lunchbox out. I'm a horrible, horrible, horrible kid. Why can't I do anything right?
Which is so not true. And as parents, we have to recognize that that's what you're feeling in that moment. Like, that's actually what's going on. And we have to do whatever we can to relieve that pain first before we can do any kind of corrective action. Do you need to validate what's going on right there? Oh, I can see this is. You're really angry that you forgot to pick up your lunch bag again. Like, I can see that you're upset with yourself. I can see it. So why don't we just sort of like take a load off, not worry about it, okay? And I know you'll go get your lunch bag box when you're ready. Like, there's all kinds of ways to know that about your kid and be ready for it.
Absolutely. And then on the flip side of that, that's hard to do because they're,
It
as a, I don't have kids, so I can't speak from personal experience, but in having conversations with parents and working with, my clients with ADHD and their
Yeah.
families, it's that common experience of, well, I just can't even do that. Like, what did I do wrong? Why can't I just figure out how to teach my kid how to put them back? Like, where am I failing as a parent?
Right?
Where am I
Yes.
failing as a parent? And that is also an RSD response. Or when your kid responds to you in like a, parents sometimes, your kid has a tone to you and you're like, oh my goodness, they're mad at me. Like, what did I do wrong? That
Yeah.
is also your experience of RSD. And so it's important
Exactly.
to acknowledge and recognize that in yourself as well. And this is also where when I say it goes both ways.
It
So I'll be
does.
when we're talking about, younger kids, they haven't developed as many skills for, emotional regulation. And that's where the responsibility is going to be more on the adult to help them with that. But that doesn't mean that we can't teach kids about how to understand, when I say this, mom has that same feeling that I have. So maybe I practice, being aware of that as well. And that's a good life skill. And obviously we do that in an age appropriate way.
Exactly.
Teach them to do that differently than a 5-year-old who can't even conceptualize a lot of aspects of their feelings yet. But
well, I'm glad you're mentioning that. I'm glad you're mentioning the fact that parents are modeling how to self-regulate and how to break the RSD cycle themselves. And I also am glad that you're mentioning the fact that parents don't always have their own good days, right? In fact, we have some really challenging, tough days where we ourselves are wrapped up in what's going on with ourselves. Rightly so, we're allowed, we're human. And so we're not going to get it right. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to, handle it all wrong. Oh my God, just totally decimate the whole thing. But as long as we're able to go back and say to our child, hey, oops, sorry about that. I did not handle that well. And I really should have mentioned to you that I recognize you're having a rough day. Then that's okay. Then the child will, together, you're healing together. And together, you're realizing that there can be rough moments, but that you can bond, you can fix together.
Exactly. Yeah.
Brittany, I was wondering if you could also mention sort of the peer-to-peer kind of RSD reaction. So, like, it's one thing for parents and kids to have their own reactions, but also like peer-to-peer, kid-to-kid, and how that sort of plays out. Because I think it's important for not only kids to understand that the dynamic may be a little bit different, but also that parents need to actually respect and recognize that the peer-to-peer RSD phenomena is just slightly different and harder in some ways.
Yeah. So this is definitely one that brings up, it pulls on my heartstrings a lot, because I feel for younger Brittany, and I also feel for, all of when I work with clients and, they're younger, and I hear them say, like, well, I don't even have a friend. Right. And unfortunately, it's really common. I always forget the statistic. I'll have to look it up.
Okay.
But I'll have to look it up and then I'll say it. But it's
okay.
A significant amount of kids with ADHD don't have one friend, don't have a single friend.
Right. Oh.
And that is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I hear it all the time. And it always makes me, it's one of those things. And I know that for parents as well, it's really tough. I've definitely seen a lot of parents struggle over the fact that their child doesn't have any friends. And there's a certain level of, emotional pain that they go through grieving for their child in many ways. But then even within friendships that do exist, kids with ADHD are more likely to, not have fulfilling friendships. So they're people facing, they're masking, they're not being themselves, they're getting left out, they feel like the least liked friend. And I know sometimes it can be really easy to minimize like kids' drama. We're like, oh, it's just not gonna matter in 10 years. It's not gonna matter. But it does, because here we are 10 years later and RSD is a big part of our life. And so it's that idea of, not getting invited to the birthday party, or being picked last at school, or, a common one is you have a pair project or activity class, and everybody, all your friends pick each other, and then it's like, what about me? And those are all real rejections. And then there's within that, that sensitivity to those not real rejections of like, oh, well, that was a weird tone, or, oh, I said I like this song and you said you didn't like it. And it can be really easy to dismiss those experiences when your kid comes back, you know, right. And it's like this happened, and you're like, well, that's not a big deal. Like, that's okay. But it is a big deal to them, because to them in that moment, they're in that, they feel so rejected, and they feel so small, and they feel they're hurting. And especially now in the world of social media, they're constantly seeing all the other social interactions that are happening. It creates so many other opportunities for RSD, not having somebody text you back, seeing your friends post a picture of each other together and you weren't invited.
Right.
These are, regardless of if it was intentional, unintentional, and if your child is already in that state, like if they're coming home from school and they're feeling rejected, or they're, you know, they're struggling with that, of course it's going to affect how they communicate with you, and they're going to already be in this kind of like heightened emotional state where, you know, any kind of other, what a question or a remark or feedback that maybe on another day, even for that specific child, would be a no-brainer, is going to set them off because they already feel so rejected in that moment.
Right.
And definitely, you know, it's important to acknowledge when they are experiencing that, helping them work through it, and with some perspective taking, which we, our workshop does go over specific strategies and tools to work through when you are having this response, because it's not just about being stuck in it. It's okay, oh, you are stuck in it. Let's see how we can change our perspective, get out of this, move out of this, so that we can move on with our day. But just dismissing it or just not being aware of it, I think that a lot of, you know, those conflicts that happen are often in that, you know, when we're already in that heightened emotional state already.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to delivering this workshop as we put the final touches to the design.
Yeah.
And also really looking forward to watching the Brittany magic come alive.
Magic.
Oh,
Danielle, it's magic. We love Danielle magic.
Well, together we have we've seen it work all together, and it's just wonderful to see how you get how you allow kids to open up in front of you and normalize even the most challenging of behaviors. It's you're wonderful. You're wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I'll just really quickly, just because, you know, for, you know, any parents out there, and if you know that this is, maybe this is the first time you're hearing about it, maybe you've heard about it before, you know, building your toolkit is really the most important thing. And, you know, this is what our workshop, you know, it has the creative component, it has a bunch of team building activities, it has reflective components, it also has educational pieces. You're going to walk away with some actual like strategies and tools. That's the goal of the workshop, for you to walk away with actual tools that you can immediately start using, but also a pathway for how you can continue to build on your own as things come up, because every situation is different. Everyone's always evolving. And it's just going to lay the groundwork to help, you know, build that connection. And yeah, just wanted to add that.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you ended with that, because it is true. So, well, thank you for spending some time with me, just going through that. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to working with you.
Me too.
Have a great day.
Thank you.